What Asanga has illustrated, the blessed attention can be differentiated into two parts. One part is the theoretical, the other part is actually the realization. And so all dharmas can be classified into these two. If you have both of the this, if you have both of these teachings, then it's really considered to have the complete transmission of the Buddha's teaching. And what qualifies as holding both the theoretical and experiential portion of the Buddha's teaching? For the theoretical part of the Buddha's teaching, it means there are actually four different divisions. According to my only school and the Madhyamika school, whatever the Buddha's taught is consists under the theoretical. But as for the power to its Theravada portion, they only consider the fact that this is during the first teaching of the Buddha, and also the Four Noble Truths and the 12 Dependent Rising. This is what is considered the theoretical part according to the Theravada tradition. And therefore, according to the Mahayana tradition, all of the Buddha's teaching, whether it's listening, contemplation, and practice, is actually consists of qualifies as the Buddha's teaching. But for the Theravada, it's actually is only the turning of the wheel, and then it's only restricted to listening, contemplation, and practice of the according to the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, and also according to the teachings of like the Four Noble Truths and the 12 Dependent Rising.
Now, about the other portion, the Buddha Dharma, within Buddha Dharma, the state of realization refers to what? Now, it refers with regard to the high vehicle of the Mahayana, it refers to the five paths or the 15 levels. Now, the 15th path is actually divided into three vehicles. For example, the Shabaka's five path, the Prajagapada five path, and the Bodhisattva five paths, all together consisting of 15 paths. And with regard to the three vehicles, the individual five paths, each of them respectively, their qualities, the morality, meditation, and wisdom, and this all refers to the path of realization. So about the lower vehicles, such as the Hinayana, and the Hinayana thing, define enlightenment as having realized the path of seeing of Hinayana, and in order to realize the path of seeing, they do the listening, contemplating, and practicing, and through this, only then will they consider this as the enlightenment or realization of the Hinayana path. So why is there such a difference between Mahayana and Hinayana? Distinction, why is it so large? It's because in the past, the Buddha at Varanasi, the dear path, when first he turned first to the wheel of Dharma, what the Buddha taught is the Four Noble Truths. And within the Four Noble Truths, the most important is how to realize the path of seeing of the Hinayana path. So therefore, in the Hinayana tradition, they take it such that only through the path of seeing such a practitioner, only then could he, this practitioner, be considered to have realized the Buddha's Four Noble Truths content. And as a result of this, they consider the realization from the Dharma to belong only to the path, to the practitioner of the path of seeing. So only the Buddha's realization, only the Buddha's realization of the Dharma. Now, what does it mean? It means that only through listening, contemplating, and application, and through this gaining morality, meditation, and wisdom. So as to why today we will teach to this one, it's because today we want to introduce to all our teacher, Buddha Shakyamuni, everything what the Buddha has taught, the queen essence of all the of what the Buddha has taught. The first is the Four Noble Truths. Besides that, the three vehicle, the Dharma door of the three vehicle, the Buddha's three turning wheel of Dharma, the content, and what's the essence of these three turning wheel of Dharma, what they are. So with regard to what the Buddha has taught, what are they? Now, some people said the Buddha has taught 84,000 kinds of Dharma. Other people said the Buddha can be categorized into the Sutrayana and the Tantrayana vehicles. And there are some other people say that the Buddha Dharma can be categorized into that of the Hinayana or the Mahayana. And there are even other people who say the Dharma can be categorized into the three turning of the wheel of the Dharma. So as to how many kinds of Dharma the Buddha has taught, what the types of Dharma the Buddha has taught, there also appear this distinction between the Hinayana and Mahayana. The Mahayana say that the Buddha has taught 84,000 kinds of Dharma, whereas the Hinayana say the Buddha has taught about only 80,000 doctrine. Hinayana think that the Buddha taught 80,000, Mahayana say Buddha taught 84,000 types of Dharma. So why are there still difference? The Mahayana practitioner said that the Buddha, the sentient being, has 84,000 kinds of defilement. In order, as antidote to this 84,000 defilement, the Buddha taught 84,000 Dharma. And the lower vehicle, the Hinayana practitioner, said that the Buddha has only 80,000 kinds of defilement. So the Buddha taught 80,000 Dharma as an antidote, respectively, to each of these defilements. So in regard to the upper vehicle, the higher vehicle for the Mahayana practitioner, the Buddha, for different capacity of sentient being, he taught 84,000 kinds of Dharma. Why is that so? That's because for the Mahayana practitioner, with regard to sentient beings' defilements can also divided into three main types: attachment, hatred, and ignorance. With regard to ignorance and greed, the Buddha taught 21,000. To ignorance, Buddha taught 21,000 antidote, and towards attachment, 21,000, towards anger, 21,000 Dharma. So, and with regard to all three together, the Buddha taught 21,000 Dharma. So, 21,000 respectively to each of the three, and then finally another 21,000 to all three as a whole. All together, the Buddha has taught 84,000 kinds of Dharma. So, similarly, with regard to the lower vehicles, the Hinayana practitioner, now they take it that attachment, there are 20,000 kinds, ignorance, 20,000 kinds of defilement, and then each of the three poison has 20,000 defilements. So in order, and as a whole, each of them produce 20,000 kinds of defilement. Altogether, 20,000 times 4 is 80,000 kinds of defilement. So as respective antidote to each of these, the Buddha taught 80,000 Dharma against these 80,000 kinds of defilement, which arises from each of these defilements in respectively as well as a whole. So 84,000 kinds of Dharma, if you want to categorize them further, we can categorize them into, say, the three treasures and the nine kinds of teachings. Now this is also a form of distinction. So with regard to the three treasures or the Tripitaka, now that refers to this sutra, the commentary, as well as the Vinaya, these are the three baskets or the three treasures. With regard to the Sutrayana, the commentary, and the Vinaya, now what are they talking about within these three Tripitaka? Now this, what they are teaching here, essentially is to teach about morality, samadhi, and wisdom. So in order to teach on morality, the Buddha taught Vinaya. In order to give rise to concentration, the Buddha taught sutra, and in order to give rise to wisdom, there is the commentary to, basket. So altogether, these three baskets produces each of these three learnings: morality, concentration, and wisdom. So the Buddha has taught that period of time, or what the Buddha has taught can divide it into three types, respectively the first turning, second turning, as well as the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, the three periods in which the Buddha turned the Dharma. So during the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, when did it happen? It happened when the Buddha in the past, when the Buddha was on the Vajra seat, he attained unsurpassed enlightenment of the Buddhahood, and it's the time of the full moon day, and after 49 days, the Buddha went to Varanasi, the deer park, and is at that place where the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths, during the Four Noble Truths, the first turning of the wheel of Dharma. So the Buddha, when he first turned the wheel of Dharma, the audience to which he taught is in the human realm are the five ordained monks, the five bhikkhus. Besides that, there are infinite number of gods, heavenly beings, is infinite, or the coming to the thousands and millions. And when the Buddha first taught the wheel of Dharma's content, the Buddha actually initially he introduced how to understand understand the truth of suffering, how to understand the cause of suffering, how to understand the truth of the end of suffering, how to understand the truth of the path of the end of truth, the end of suffering. And further to that, the Buddha taught also in the truth of suffering, you have to realize the truth of suffering, you have to stop the cause of suffering, and you have to realize the truth of the end of suffering, and the path is the path that we must practice. So in short, the Buddha, so as to teach the Four Noble Truths, the Buddha has actually also divided into 12 types or 12 types, 12 manner of explaining the content of the Four Noble Truths. So to put it simply, the first turning wheel of Dharma of the Buddha, he taught the Four Noble Truths, and the first time the Buddha introduced what exactly is the truth of suffering, what exactly is the truth of the cause of suffering, what exactly is the truth of the end of suffering, and what exactly is the truth of the path to end of suffering. Now the Buddha is teaching the actual nature of these four truths. So about the second turning wheel of the Dharma, the Buddha, in addition to that, went further to elaborate upon the content of the Four Noble Truths. Now at the beginning, the Buddha taught that first of all, we must understand what is the truth of suffering, and why is this so? Because in the truth of suffering, there are many types of suffering, and all these types of suffering can be condensed into suffering of change, and suffering of aggregates. Now, once you've understood what is suffering, now we have to stop. After knowing there's suffering, we have to want to stop the suffering. Then we find out what is the cause of suffering. After the Buddha taught the truth of the cause of suffering, so as to, we know what to stop. And essentially, this is due with defilement and the law of karma. And in order to stop the law of karma and defilements, the truth of it, the Buddha taught that we need to understand that there's an end, there's a truth to the end, there's an end to suffering, there's a truth to it. So therefore, we know that there's a truth to the end of suffering, so it means that the karma and defilement can be stopped. So once you know there's a truth for the end of suffering, we have to practice. Therefore, the Buddha proceeded on to the fourth noble truth, which is the truth for the path of the end of suffering. So there's no cause, it is not that enlightenment has no cause. There's a cause to enlightenment, and that is through the fourth noble truth, which is the truth of the path to the end of suffering. So following that, the Buddha, at the third turning wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught that ultimately, with regard to the end of suffering, so exactly what is the feature of it? Now the suffering arises because of self-grasping. Now with regard to self-grasping, what's the nature of it? For when the Mahayana Hinayana is concerned, the self that they recognize or they define as is in the independently arising self-arising kind of identity of a self. So when the Buddha teach about selflessness, this is for Hinayana. When we regard to the Mahayana, the Mahayana teachings taught that the self cannot be found. And so this false grasping itself, this self exists solely through name and form, has no inherent existence. So this from the point of view of Mahayana, which is that self is empty and cannot be found. So actually, when we talk about self, now self can be divided into subtle as well as the gross definition of self. So what we feel as suffering is a result of karma and defilement, defilements ripening. So with regard to self, self is something which is from a false perception. So that arises a false sense of self. Now, when with regard to self, it doesn't have any true existence inherently. Now, similarly, now Buddha continued teaching with regard to the cause of suffering, what are the causes to stop? Now, the cause of suffering themselves cannot be found. The cause of suffering must be stopped and eliminated. Now, the cause of suffering is divided into a kind of adventitious distinctions of the mind. So, with regard to the truth of suffering, with the true existence of the cause of suffering is for the non-Buddhists, for the Buddhists, the truth of the cause of suffering themselves are also themselves without inherent nature and cannot be found. So similarly, from logically sequenced as we progress downward, when the Buddha teach the truth of the end of suffering, how does he define it? Now the truth of the end of suffering means themselves has no form and no name, and so no inherent existence to be found. So with regard to breaking karma and defilement, you have to realize the truth of the end of suffering. And truth of end of suffering, from beginningless time, the truth of end of suffering, the causes of the end of suffering, and to the truth of the end of suffering themselves, from beginningless time, cannot be found. And so this false sense of grasping to a truth of the end of suffering themselves must be overcome and eliminated. So similarly, the Buddha further on taught about the truth of the path to the end of suffering. Now Buddha very clearly state that what constitutes this truth. Now the path, it refers to the path that exists since beginningless time. Generally we all mention that the path, the truth of the path to the end of suffering, through this we can accomplish the end, the truth of the end of suffering. But since the truth of the end of suffering themselves from beginning time cannot be found, so similarly the truth of the path to the end of suffering cannot be found. It is all this exists as a result of adventitious thought and arise and exists only in terms of form and name. Hence realization from beginningless time cannot be found. So and therefore the path that we practice cannot be found since from beginningless time. In all the scriptures it is very clear saying that the form and name phenomena from beginningless time cannot be found are inherently empty and are inherently empty. Now, at the dear part Varanasi, when the Buddha first turned the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. This is what happens at that time. Now, why did the Buddha turn the wheel of Dharma in Varanasi? And the reason is because the Varanasi, it will be where all the 1,000 Buddha, each of them, in the first turning wheel of Dharma, they will teach at Varanasi. And so the Buddha of the 1,000 Buddha, he's one of them, he's the fourth Buddha of the 1,000 Buddha. So therefore, the Buddha, when the first turned the wheel of Dharma, the Buddha teach at birth the Vajrasit and around the Vajrasit, similarly here, he prostrated three times. And so therefore, every Dhamma teacher will make prostration to the Dhamma throne three times as a result of what the Buddha himself has done before he teaches Dhamma, which is to make prostration to the Dhamma throne. Now, at Varanasi, the Buddha does it mean that the Buddha has never taught in Varanasi before? But actually, Buddha has indeed taught before in Varanasi. But this does not constitute the actual former beginning, commencement of the first turning wheel of Dhamma. To the five bhikkhus, the Buddha did not consider this a former beginning, because a former beginning will need to be divided into the gross and subtle presentation of the Four Noble Truths. Now, with regard to the Dhamma has been taught before this formal commencement, there's no gross and subtle distinction. It can only be known as a kind of a informal presentation, informal talk. So therefore, this early teaching without distinction of the gross and subtle presentation cannot be considered a formal commencement of the turning wheel of Dhamma. So with regard to this kind of presentation, there are some scholars who dispute it. They say that the Four Noble Truths must definitely be taught in terms of gross and subtle definition. Now, however, during that time, any Dhamma has been taught at that time can constitute the first turning wheel of Dhamma. But we must understand that the practitioner of great wisdom, with regard to these disputes, we are only the arena of people who has grasped wisdom, and it's not an arena for ourselves to engage into. So when the Buddha turned the wheel of Dharma the second time, the place is on the Vajrasit Peak, Rajagriha, or Yangbachen. So the main teaching is that of the Prajnaparamita. This comprises of the 100,000, etc. The longest, the medium, and the short, and the most succinct Heart Sutra. And all this the Buddha has taught the Rajagriha, the Vajrasapi. Now at that time, with regard to heavenly beings alone, is about 14,000 heavenly gods filling out the space. Now with regard to students, comprises of disciple of Mahayana capacity. So when the Buddha is turning, well, it is regard to the truth of the wisdom of selflessness, Dharma of selflessness. Now the first turning with view of Dharma belongs to Mahayana vehicle, belongs to Mahayana Sutra teachings, and what is teaching at that time instead of the Dharma Sutra, the Prajna Paramita as well as the Heart Sutra. So at this moment, at this part, with regard to the different vehicles and all the presentation of different traditions, what is saying that at the first century of Dharma belongs to that of the Mahayana's quintessential teachings. What it's teaching is about of the five kinds of five selflessness. And with regard to the second turning wheel of Dharma, it is divine to the Mahayana Sutrayana teachings now, and mainly is teaching the emptiness of phenomena. So there's another kind of teaching with regard to the first, the selflessness presentation is the Hinayana. If teaching this emptiness of phenomena is the Mahayana presentation. Now why is there such a distinction? The distinction is made in such a way because at the second turning wheel of Dharma, now what they mainly teach is that of Prajna. Now with regard, what is the use of Prajna? Now Prajna is mainly to stop the defilement of fundamental ignorance. So and today, if we are simply talking about the emptiness of self, now we are simply getting rid of the ignorance of general the defilement, or getting rid of the defilement general ignorance, and not getting rid of the defilement of the fundamental ignorance as during the second turning of the wheel of Dharma, whereby the emptiness of phenomena is taught above that of the emptiness of self. So besides that, when the Buddha has turned the second turn wheel of Dharma, the Buddha has also taught the Vajrayana, also especially the teaching of the Guhya Samaja root tantra as well as the Kala Chakra root tantra. Now with regard to Vajrayana, Vajrayana is taught in an esoteric manner, which is taught only to a few beings of intimate disciples of very sharp capacity, and therefore they are teaching that at the same time simultaneously with the second turning wheel of Dharma. Such a way of presenting is agreed to by a lot of people. However, this is not something that we can see with our naked physical eyes. So from there, we can understand that in Vajrayana is taught in secret, and is only to a selected, limited number of disciple, intimate disciple of very sharp capacity. And why is that so? Because in Vajrayana, it was mentioned that we have to make use of the qualified consort to gain enlightenment, and this cannot be taught in the open, but only secretly. And why is that so? Because in the Vajrayana vehicle is mentioned that through the union of the qualified consort, we give rise to great bliss, and great bliss, we use that to realize emptiness and so to enlightenment, and to disciples like that. They can only be taught to disciples who are profound, who are intimate, and who are qualified with a sharp capacity. Only to such disciples can Vajrayana be taught. So next, what we're going to teach is about the last turning wheel of Dharma. Last turning wheel of Dharma, it refers to the third turning, and the third turning of the wheel of Dharma. Now the place is at the India, Yangbachen. Where is it near? It is near the east, to the east of India, and with regard from the viewpoint of central India, it is to the east. Now what the Buddha taught at that time, the disciples to what he taught are those of middle capacity, which is that of the Yogacara school, and these students are Yogacara disciples So this kind of saying is that the Buddha at the first turning, the disciples belong to that of the disciples of lowest capacity. Now second turning is disciples of the highest vehicle, and the third turning is the disciples of the middle capacity. Now because the Buddha at the last turning of the view of Dharma, the Buddha actually taught about the truth of the end of suffering is truth truly is existent and can be found. So at that time, what the Buddha taught, the sutra taught at that time, it essentially is to elucidate on the Tathagata Gaba or the treasure or the my only school. So therefore, His Holiness Dalai Lama has also mentioned that with regard to Madhyamika, the South Tantrika school, how do we define it? The second turning wheel of Dharma, it is in order to facilitate teaching of the Tathagata Gaba, and also is essentially to teach about the truth of the end of suffering as truly existent, and so it is a kind of conditioning as a type of the Dharma in order to facilitate as a foundation to turn the third wheel of Dharma. So, however, with regard to the Yogacara presentation is that only at the third when turning the wheel of Dharma is the ultimate, because when the Buddha turned the third wheel of Dharma, the wheel of Dharma third time is at the request of 10 Bodhisattvas to the Buddha as to why during the first and second turning wheel of Dharma there are some distinctions. So the Buddha replied and gave 10 answers to the questions given by the Bodhisattva. So therefore, they're saying this is the Buddha's ultimate intent from his innermost heart. So therefore, the Yogacara people, disciples, consider the third turning wheel of Dharma is the ultimate, and therefore they take the third turning wheel of Dharma as to being that of the ultimate of the ultimate truth, the most profound. So similarly, with regard to the third turning wheel of Dharma, it is also divided into the actual presentation and then the non-actual presentation. Now, different high beings has different elucidation, elaboration on this. So when the Buddha turned the wheel of Dharma three times, and within this, we can divide it into the Mahayana or the of the Hinayana, and sometimes we can divide that into what the Mahayana said, or what the Hinayana people Hinayana presentation. Now with regard to what the Buddha's tradition, there are only about four. Now in one of the commentary was very clearly stated that in Buddhism there are only four kinds of tradition. If there's a fourth tradition, then this is not non-dharma. So with regard to this four tradition, now how do we divide them between the Hinayana and the Mahayana? With regard to the Sutrayana, and then the Yogacara and Madhyamika belong to that of the Mahayana, so the others belong Hinayana. Now the difference is as to whether they ascertain the emptiness of phenomena, and whether the ascertainment of the emptiness of phenomena is a distinguishing feature between the Hinayana and the Mahayana. Now within this, touching about the emptiness of phenomena, there are two types too, which is Yogacara and Madhyamika. Now with regard to Yogacara, now what is emptiness of phenomena? Emptiness of phenomena refers to external phenomena, external phenomena are non-existent, and the two forms of grasping themselves are also empty by nature, so they do not recognize the reality of external phenomena, meaning, for example, with regard to the emptiness, a person who realized these two emptiness are that of the Mahayana practitioner. With regard to the Hinayana realize selflessness, the emptiness of independent arising self, to eliminate the identity of inherently existent self is that of the main practice of the Hinayana. Now with regard to Yogacara, now what's the difference between Yogacara and that of the Hinayana? Now first of all, we have to understand the Hinayana takes that if we gain enlightenment today, and realize that the emptiness of inherently self and her enlightenment thought, then you can attain Buddhahood. But Yogacara doesn't feel that. Now, Yogacara thinks that even if today you realize the emptiness of an inherently existent self and has bodhicitta, now you can only gain liberation but not Buddhahood. Now, to attain Buddhahood, you must also realize, you can realize another two kinds of emptiness, and to realize the external phenomena cannot be found. And only you realize the external phenomena cannot be found, then you can attain Buddhahood, in addition to bodhicitta and realization of the selflessness. So as we introduced above, now is with regard to Yogacara presentation or definition of the difference between Hinayana Mahayana. With regard to Madhyamika's definition of the distinction between Hinayana Mahayana, first of all, we must talk about Madhyamika itself can divide into that of the Sautantrika and the Prasangika. Now, with regard to the Madhyamika, Prasangika refers to that with regard to Hinayana Mahayana, both must realize from the beginningless time, the lack of inherent existence, must realize that phenomena themselves cannot be established independently for the soul to be free from samsara, and so to attain Buddhahood on the basis of this. Now, the difference here is with regard is to whether there's a bodhicitta or great compassion. Now, where the Mahayana is concerned, they say they have great compassion and bodhicitta, and so practice the four acts of the six paramita and the four ways of attracting disciples of a bodhisattva. Now, regard to the Mahayana, they have renunciation, and essentially they practice the Four Noble Truths and accumulate lots of merit on the and so these are the two practices of the Hinayana. So therefore, in order to realize the Buddha Dharma, you must realize in Buddha Dharma the four traditions within this four tradition, with regard to the three vehicles. How do we establish or define them? The three vehicles can also be subsumed to the to two or to one vehicle. With regard to Hinayana, it refers to the Mahayana refers to the Yogacara and the Madhyamika. So, and how do we distinguish between Mahayana and Hinayana? It is to whether they realize the emptiness of phenomena. So, and those that recognize or ascertain this emptiness of self phenomena is Mahayana, and there's only or realize this the emptiness of self is the Hinayana. Now, with regard to the three vehicles, they refer to the Shravaka, the Prayaka Buddhas, and the Bodhisattva tradition vehicles. And of these three vehicles, within them, the Shravaka and Prayaka Buddha belong to Hinayana, Bodhisattva path belong to the Mahayana path. And why do we call them Shravaka and Prayaka Buddha as Hinayana? Because they are only looking for self-benefit or to fulfill benefit for ourselves, and which is liberation from samsara. This is defined as Hinayana. With regard to Shravaka and Prayaka Buddha, the emptiness of self is more important than the benefit for oneself is more important than benefiting others. Mahayana is rather different in that they realize that just fulfilling benefit for ourselves is selfish, and in addition to that, for the sake of all sentient beings, we must think of them and furthermore to pursue the benefit for others, which is for all sentient being. Now, this is the very difference in terms of motivation between the Hinayana and the Mahayana. Now, we do to simply recognize the difference between Hinayana and Mahayana, and about Mahayana, the breaking of the nature of the self-grasping, and what does it mean? Now, in the with regard to Prasangika Madhyamika, it means that the Mahayana selflessness or the Mahayana sutras, and mainly they are divided to two main kinds, and one is that of the is to talk about the profound emptiness prajna, the emptiness of phenomena. The other form refers to talk about great compassion, bodhicitta, and also to talk about recognizing beings, one to pay the kindness, the six paramita, and how to attain the Buddha's three bodies. These sutras are known as the Mahayana sutras, and petitioner of these are known as the Mahayana. Mahayana Sutras. So therefore, when we talk about the Hinayana and Mahayana Sutras, now we've got to their content. This is to make the distinction based on the sutra, whether it's Hinayana Mahayana, is all taught by the Buddha, and all are Buddhist sutras. However, with regard to the difference of their content, is different. With the Madhyamika, Sautantrika, now is saying that it's mainly define it as those we talk about selflessness is Hinayana, the talk about selfless phenomena is Mahayana, but with regard to the Prasangika, Madhyamika, now they are saying that simply putting it saying phenomena is empty, is known as the Mahayana Sutra. If to extensively extend phenomena is empty, is that Mahayana Sutra, or is that and this is a very succinct way of dividing Hinayana and Mahayana from the viewpoint of the Prasangika Madhyamika. Now, in many commentaries is mentioned that in the Buddhist Sutra, now what is the difference? Let's say talking about what's the division line between them. Let's say in the Prajna Paramita Sutras, it is the not just thing but the extensive, the medium, and the short, or the most succinct Prajna Paramita Sutra. And now the Prajna Paramita Sutra, now what they talk about mainly is to talk about the emptiness. Now. And indirectly they talk about stages of the path to enlightenment, and how this the Prajna Paramita teach is both indirect or the indirect or the covert or the overt presentation. Now when the Buddha teach the Prajna Paramita Sutra, now within it, now what it directly taught about is the profound truth of emptiness. Now this profound truth of emptiness, now who elucidated it, elaborated, is Nagarjuna. Now Nagarjuna, in order to elaborate upon the Buddha's profound truth of wisdom emptiness, actually composed the guide to the middle path and the six commentaries of the middle path, etc. Now within these, now what they're talking about is to elaborate upon the profound emptiness. Now and the one, the most important, is that of the guide, the main guide to the middle way. And some of the other commentary are rebutters to the non-Buddhist views, heretical views, in regard to, and also to elaborate, clarify the doubts of the Buddhists. And sometimes they're saying, after breaking that of the heretical views, then to establish the correct, the logical point to grasp that. Now, with regard to emptiness, emptiness is essentially is to understand the profound emptiness, and it is not. It's not to establish essentially is to realize emptiness and not another. Now, with regard to the root commentary is to talk about profound emptiness. With regard to the realization of the stages of path is not elaborated upon, but only covertly taught. But the elaborated upon is that the profound emptiness. Now, the other five commentaries by Nagarjuna, such as that of the four bodhicitta teachings and the priest of the Dhammakaya, now etc. These four commentaries, these are at the same time teaching upon the profound emptiness, as well as to review the other stages of the paths, and so, and these are more towards was very much respected by the general students. Now later on, Nagarjuna's disciple Buddhapalita also composed many other commentaries. Now and actually elaborate the Madhyamika teaching, especially Buddhapalita, in order to elaborate upon the root Madhyamika commentary, talk about guide to the entry way, and talk about ornament of the middle way, talk about illuminating the middle path commentary, and all these are to talk about the profound emptiness, is, and also revealing the stages of enlightenment. And so very importantly is talk about how the practitioner through profound emptiness and through the stages of path can attain the ultimate state of Buddhahood. So the guide, the entry to the middle way, as well as the illuminating the path, is also very much respected by the general population. So similarly, later on, the Nagarjuna's disciple Ayadeva also, in order to propagate Nagarjuna's secret intent, composed 400 stanzas of Mahadhamika, and within this these 100 stanzas, Ayadeva also talk about the prestigious of the path as well as that of profoundness. Later on, Shantideva composed God Bodhisattva way of life and also include profound emptiness and the stages of paths within his text. For example, in the God Bodhisattva way of life, the first chapter to the eighth chapter, they are all to establish the stages of the path, and the ninth chapter is on profound emptiness. It's about Nagarjuna's handling management of the Madhyamika, and then the tenth chapter is that of dedication, consists of dedication, the principles of aspirations. In the tenth chapter, in the past, in the Nalanda University, many scholars and actually all followed Nagarjuna's footsteps, and also as an example to later practitioner as to how true to profound wisdom and through the stages of the path, the combination of stages of the path and emptiness to attain the state of Buddhahood. So this great pandita or scholars towards the later disciples have established a very good example to later students, and are also very well remembered and respected and loved by the later disciples. Now, later Nalanda scholars similarly also elaborate upon the emptiness as well as the stages of the path, and we've got the stages of the path teaching. Now, who actually elaborated that? Maitreya actually elaborated upon this very much, and the Buddha in the Prajnaparamita Sutra, the Buddha taught stages of the path, and through this, but the Buddha taught stages of the path in a very covert or indirect manner or hidden manner. So this profound hidden meaning, which is revealed and elaborated upon, is that of Buddha, of the Maitreya Bodhisattva. And because the Maitreya Bodhisattva, in order to reveal the stages of the path, actually composed the famous Buddha Nature, the ornamental commentary, and also but it is this is elaborated on the basis of Madhyamika and or Yogacara, and using Yogacara, both Yogacara and Madhyamika as a basis for composing of this ornament, famous ornament commentary, and is in synthesis of the principle of the Yogacara and the Madhyamika. So this ornament, this commentary by Bodhisattva Maitreya, the ornament is a synthetic, is a synthesis of the principles of the Yogacara and the Madhyamika, and actually reveals very clearly the stages of the path, which is covertly taught by the Buddha in the Prajnaparamita. Now, Nagarjuna, he composed the Madhyamika principle. Maitreya composed the five root commentaries in order to elaborate the Madhyamika, the Yogacara, their stages of the path of these two, as well as the profound emptiness. Now, later on in Tibet, the great scholars themselves actually following example of the Nalanda scholars, also composed many commentaries, such as Lama Tsongkhapa composed the Lamrim Chemo and the great Lamrim Chemo, and a certain section before that, a certain section in the Lamrim Chemo, the Tsongkhapa deals mainly with the stages of the path, such as the six paramita, the four bodhisattva way of attracting disciples, the establishment of the law of karma, etc. All these are following the example of Venerable Atisha, and Venerable Atisha composed the lamb illuminating path, stages of the path. In order to elaborate even more clearly Atisha's commentary, Tsongkhapa therefore composed his Lamrim Chenmo. And a correction, the Maitreya's commentary is that the sublime continuum, not the ornamental commentary, instead of the commentary of the sublime continuum. Now, the Lamrim Chenmo, within Lamrim Chenmo, based on Atisha's lamb of the path to enlightenment, and is a teaching from the point of the path as the root, relying on the spiritual friend. They elaborate then all the way up to refuge, all the way up to the law of karma, and this part belongs to the lower scope, and all the way to the middle scope, and then to the higher scope, and all the belongs to the realization path, and this rely upon the Lamrim Chenmo principles, or to talk of the great profound path of emptiness that we establish, is that the path of emptiness. What emptiness are they talking about here? What they're talking about, or what they're trying to eliminate, what they're trying to overcome. come. Now it means that from the view to see the nature of reality, and so as to base upon to realize the grasp emptiness. And this in Tibet, in India, many of these great teachers, while composing, practicing, they actually merge this, the realization emptiness, with that of the stages of the path, as the main intent of their teachings. Now in the Buddhist Sutra, now there are many different kinds of presentation. Why is that so? Because when the Buddha teach the Dharma, is in order to actually help the mind of disciples, and to help the mind of disciples, what the Buddha taught is similar to a doctor prescribing different kinds of medication, and based on the same forms of logic. Because if the doctor towards somebody who is suffering from heat disease, the doctor will tell him to pray to refrain from eating meat, less oil, because oil and meat themselves is going to aggravate the heat form of illness. So therefore, less oil and less meat. But for disciples suffering from cold disease, the doctor will have a different kind of recommendation, which is that you need to have more oil and more meat. So in order to make yourself strong, so as to get rid of the coldness of the body. So similarly, the Buddha, according to different capacity and a mental capacity and a faculty of beings, teach differently. So the Buddha, not to the Hinayana and the Mahayana, the Buddha teach different present selflessness in different way with regard to the sutra and to the Vinaya, and different ways of dealing with it. Towards the Yogacara and the Madhyamika, there are also different presentation. Now therefore, that's why there's differences with the gross presentation and the subtle presentation. All these are attributed to the Buddha's skillful means. Now because of the Buddha's skillful means, is able to fulfill the capacity of every beings, and then to suit the different capacity of beings, so that to bring all beings, to establish them through the stages of the path and up to enlightenment, is the Buddha's compassion, wisdom and quality. So now, just like to a little child, we have to first teach them the alphabets, and we will not teach him different poems and or phrases. Now then the Buddha, when teaching the disciple, the Buddha has to, according to different capacity of beings, teach differently, different ways, different manner. At first teaching the more simpler principles, and going to the more subtle and more profound path, because all sentient being capacities, their understanding, their capacities, their faculties are different. So if only they go to deep and profound path, immediately being can understand, and they may even give rise to the wrong heretical criticism. So why Buddha say non-existent as in existent? Because of the capacity of being, the Buddha give different stages of the path in order to guide beings. So similarly in the Buddhist Sutra, he has also divided into that of the definitive or the interpretative scriptures. Now therefore, the Buddha to beings of different capacity taught different Dharma, and in the Sutrayana, the Buddha actually taught the Tantra. There are four types in the Sutrayana, also four levels. Now this is all due to the beings' different capacity to fulfill every being's aspiration. The Buddha taught different manners. So within this, now the most ultimate and the most truthful, the most ultimate intent is what in the Sutrayana? Of course, it should be the Prasamika, Madhyamika, and the Tantrayana is the highest Yoga Tantra classes. And these two are the most representative of the Buddha's innermost thought and intent, and he is able to fully ascertain the truth or the sutras or the tantra, especially with regard to Prasangika, Madhyamika and the Higher Yoga Tantra. These fully represents the Buddha's innermost intent, and is only given to a limited being, a disciple of the sharpest faculty, and only these disciples are able to understand the Buddha's ultimate intent and to see the nature of reality as they truly are. So similarly, now what the Buddha taught are not are not exactly what the Buddha taught are interpretative and not exact, are not definitive, are not definitive unless as compared based on these two, on the Hisuga Tantra and the Prasangika Madhyamika. Now all the Buddhas, the Dharma, the distinctions are there due to different levels of perceptions and from the level, different levels of perception. However, with regard to conduct, there is no distinction whether Sutrayana or Tantrayana. The ethical, the six paramitas are all within the great compassion, great bodhicitta are all inclusive. And regard to the stages of path to enlightenment, the sequence is the same, is only on the levels of perception which differ. Now, level perception which differ is because because in reality the different the subtle and the gross distinctions manifestation out of reality, and sometimes it's too profound for those of Tao capacity. You, for these beings, you can't tell them, give them the subtle presentation, and you can only give them the gross presentation. And so, but once ancient beings' capacities are ripened, you can then sequence progress along the path. The levels of perception are different because the realities, manifestation are themselves different. Now when the Buddha teach disciple, he bring disciple along the different stages of the path, sequentially progressing upwards, ascending sequentially. And when we say what is ultimate and what is relative, it is not on the basis, it's not on the basis of conduct, ethical conduct, but on the basis only on the levels of perception. Now, the Buddha in the past has said that with regard to all the Dharma he has taught, we have to actually skillfully ascertain them. We cannot completely accept everything what the Buddha has said. We have to examine it very carefully, just like a businessman. After acquiring gold, we first wash it with water to clean it with cloth before burning it into the in the furnace in order to ascertain the purity of the gold. Similarly, where disciples are concerned, the discerning disciple must carefully discern what the Buddha is teaching and not to blindly accept everything the Buddha is taught. Anything that's that is illogical, that is untruthful, we should be rejected. Just as past, the past the Buddha have taught that. Therefore, for example, in the sutra, there are certain sometimes Buddha said existent, the Buddha taught in non-existence in others, and is only through skillfully seeing, realizing all this without discernment, we will criticize the Buddha. But if we skillfully, in order to skillfully understand it, we have to listen, to contemplate, and to apply and practice, and to learn properly, and through understanding completely the sutras principles, to stop all the defilements and to realize all the qualities. Only then can we conform to what in reality, what the Buddha intended in the teachings, and then to gain realization from there. So similarly in Buddha teaching, now there are certain portions where they say we have to focus on Dharma, on practice, and the others say to focus on contemplation or investigation, and we have to realize that what the Buddha has taught, what is to persevere with diligence on now, is to how to practice generosity, or to practice compassion, to practice six paramita, to practice simpaticitta, and this is what we should diligently exert ourselves upon. Now, as to what is to be investigated, now what to carefully scrutinize instead of the thought, the levels of perception, and it is through this investigation level of perception that we know which conforms to reality, and especially in the Buddha's presentation, the stages of the path of the selflessness. Now, towards the people of different capacity, Buddha taught four different ways to four different traditions. We also have to make the careful scrutiny to see which conforms to ultimate reality, and through this investigation to come to a logical conclusion, and this is how we should proceed with regard to our Dharma practice. Now the Buddha's thoughts, among them the most representative is that of interdependent arising. Now what constitute this thought? Now how to put this thought into our practice? Now the thought of interdependent arising, what encompasses, is very wide, and interdependent arising thought is essentially say where there's a result, there's a cause, and there's a cause, there shall be a result. So both of which are independent arising, and they mutually exist in reciprocal existence, in reciprocal relative existence. And through this interdependent arising, to use to subject this, apply this to phenomena, and upon this to apply into our personal practice, and this will serve as our level of perception, and to stop defilement, the stopping of defilement is the strength, and how to obtain the strength is to understand the level of to establish clearly the level of perception, and through this, through the level of the correct level of perception, to establish wisdom, and then to know what in order to eliminate and to achieve reality. And this is what all these are all related to interdependent arising. So if anyone diligently do the Dhamma practice, can understand interdependent arising very clearly and can grasp therefore the queen essence of the Buddha's teaching, and then to practice strongly, exerting effort on it. And this is the correct and correct and true Buddhist practitioner, those people who proceed along this manner. Now in a Buddhist practitioner, generosity, ethical, the six paramita and 10,000 disciplines that the foundation are something is almost taken for granted in the Buddhist sattva path. So in order to stop to stop grasping yourself, in order to stop grasping to from beginningless time, the grasping to reality, in order to stop grasping to false sense of reality through all sorts of level perception or contemplating and logic, in order to establish the emptiness. Now this person is a Mahayana practitioner. It is Mahayana practitioner to exert diligence, and he will definitely be able within it to attain the ultimate state of Buddhahood and perfect every qualities. So therefore, for the person who is sincerely want to exert themselves on the path, they must know what to concentrate upon. The Dharma, the manner of practicing must not be unconfused, must be without mistake, it must be in line with how the Buddha's with ultimate intent, in line with what Nagarjuna, Atisha, and what Lama Tsongkhapa, and many other such great wisdom, the wisdom teachers, the great scholars of Nalanda, and how they actually clearly ascertain without mistake, accurately, without confusion, to what they have taught. Only then can we attain the highest state of Buddhahood. And through this, therefore, these lineage masters of the past are worthy of our respect, are worthy of our praise, because what they taught, ascertain, are the unmistaken, accurate path. So as ourselves who follow, who exert to follow these lineage masters, and in the stages of the power, we ourselves must also accurately, without mistake, with no perversion of the view, use this to practice in this way. Why is that so? Because although we try to exert diligence, we're not able to attain enlightenment because we are on the wrong path. And we have to use non-perversion as a way to continue, then we have flourishing of the path. If we follow the correct way, through subtle discernment, distinction, and with great joyful perseverance, we shall gain the great fruition. And if we have no fruition now, it's not due to any fault of the Buddha, but due to our mistake in the manner of practice. So we shall stop here today.